Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Here on Rainbow Soul, feels good to be with you as always. A lot going on today here in the U.S., as most of you probably already know. The Supreme Court today delivered a split decision on Arizona's tough 2010 immigration law. It upheld most of the controversial provisions, but it blocked some of the implementation of others. Joining us later in the show will be Congresswoman Yvette Clark. She'll discuss that as well as some other issues. I want to remind you guys that you can download the Rainbow Soul app for iPhone and Android. Makes it real simple to check into Rainbow Soul and listen to all of your favorite Rainbow Soul hosts, as well as you can download the Music Massage app, which is the app for our 24-hour Slow Jam channel, Music Massage. When this press release came across my desk, about 4 weeks ago, this quote caught my attention. It says, this academy seeks to empower young women locally to become effective leaders globally. And that was just a comment that really resonated with me. And I said to myself, we have to have the founder and CEO of this organization on. The organization is called atthewellconferences.org. Her name is Jacqueline Glass. She's the founder and CEO. Jacqueline, I want to welcome you to the program tonight.
Thank you so much, Neil. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure here. So tell us a little bit about the organization. Is everything at theworldconferences.org, or is that just primarily for the conference that you're doing in August?
Well, I'm glad you're saying atthewellconferences.org. That is the website. The organization is called At The Well Conferences Incorporated, and we are a non-for-profit organization. We started as a means in 2009 to empower women of color who are often on the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. And we bring in speakers that will speak to issues of finances, issues of physical health and well-being, spiritual health and well-being, emotional health and well-being. And in 2009, we had a very successful conference at Princeton University, which we had 125 women. We then did it again in New York in 2009 at Columbia University, and we had about 125 women, but interestingly, we had 65 teenage girls. And I was just mesmerized by the things that they shared, and I felt that there was such a need. There was such a need to work more with this population of teen girls. So since 2009, October, we've been primarily just working with the teen girls. 2010, we had another conference, 260 teen girls, all from the inner city. We had a full day of empowerment. And then in 2011, we started our summer academy. We would draw from the conference, and we would take the most talented teens in terms of academically, those that were just motivated and enthusiastic, and oftentimes they could not afford a program that we offered, so we would seek funding, and you know, we were able to accept 52 girls in the past 3 weeks to our summer academy, and this is our second annual academy this year.
Congratulations. That's incredible. Where did At the Well, where did that name come from?
The name actually is a name that comes from the Bible, the book of John. There was a woman called the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4, and it's actually an encounter that's the longest encounter of a conversation with Jesus, and it's theological in nature, but this woman is more like an outcast. She's a Samaritan woman in sort of an area that's dominated by people that are not like her, and she comes to the well at the hottest point of the day so she wouldn't encounter other people. So to make a long story short, we want to take those that, you know, society thinks, you know, doesn't think very highly of, that doesn't have the potential, and we want to pour immensely into these young girls. And the result is we're hoping that they will empower those in their community and their neighborhoods and infuse them with just a little of what we've poured into them. So the name comes from Samaritan woman at the well.
Wow. You have a conference coming up this August 12th through 24th at Princeton University. From what I understand, you're one of the only, one of the few only Ivy League Summer Leadership Academies for minority students in this country. Is that correct?
We are. I think we are the only one for girls. There still is the W.E.B. Du Bois program, which has girls and boys. And what it is a leadership academy. We took 34 girls last year for our inaugural program. And what we do 3 hours of intense SAT prep, and we do leadership development. We've had speakers that come from corporations. We've had speakers that, you know, pretty much come from all different walks of life. We had one woman, Catherine Freeland, who came by and she did our closing exercise, and Catherine started a company in Maryland, and to make a long story short, she sold the company 7 years ago for about $300 million and then started a new company. But Catherine wanted to come back and give back to the girls and just let them know that they can aspire to do anything that it is that they want to do. But, you know, there are some tools, and she shared the tools that helped her along the way. And we've just had a magnificent speakers. This year we have Brandy and Carly Harvey, Steve Harvey's twin daughters, who will be coming to join us on August the 15th. And they are really excited to come and share, you know, information about what they do, empower young girls to stay fit and focused and fierce. So we have a really awesome lineup of women and young women that are going to come talk to the girls. And that's one of the highlights of our program, really, to just be able to have, you know, this wealth of women to come, and they can sit at the feet of the women and ask questions and just, you know, gather so much knowledge and information. That's one of the highlights of the program.
That does sound phenomenal. Now, how did you form this partnership with Princeton University? Because you got to be proud of yourself for developing that relationship.
Well, I am I'm an alum from Princeton Theological Seminary. I received my Master's of Divinity in 2003. I'm a licensed minister, and I worked with the African American students at Princeton University doing an internship from 2001 to 2003. So I was on campus quite often, and I also I was privileged to be able to cross-register and take classes at the university. So it's a wonderful, wonderful campus, a wonderful learning environment. I would often go over there for lectures. I was able to sit in on a class with Dr. Cornel West, a PhD seminar, and that was just one of the highlights of my time there in Princeton. So I developed relationships, and I think I just, you know, I showed the administration I was very serious about wanting to make a difference in the lives of young people. So they supported me in what I was doing. I also received the support of the Black Students Organization and the Professional Black Women's Organization. They helped to co-sponsor events in order for us to be on the campus of Princeton University.
That's great, Jacqueline. You know, you went there, got your education, and you're giving back on a regular basis. I really love to hear stories like that. Let's talk about the Leadership Conference coming up in August. It's August 12th through 24th at Princeton University. What are the Academy's goals when you have these conferences, particularly this conference coming up in August? What are the Academy's goals?
Okay. Just to be clear, the conferences we do yearly are every April. And we usually have between 200 and 300 young girls, and it's a one-day conference. So what we do in August is really an academy, and it's 2 weeks. So our goal is to have increased critical thinking, increase the critical awareness of what's going on in their social environments, increase the drive for them to want to excel and to do better. One of our students last year, she was accepted to Steve Harvey's Dream Academy, and she was one applicant out of 5,000. And her mother wrote a wonderful letter just stating that because of the academy and because of the curriculum that we had in essay writing, her daughter was able to go to this, be accepted to this wonderful program. And we have teachers that are professors at Ivy League universities, and they come back and they teach and they want to give back. So it's not an easy environment. Last year, a lot of the times the girls were up till 1 o'clock in the morning trying to complete homework and do assignments. It's a very intense academic environment. We try to let them get a snippet of what college life is like, and you know, it is competitive, but the girls had a lot of camaraderie with one another, and they developed friendships, and 9 of our girls were accepted to college. All our seniors were accepted to college, and one of our students received a full scholarship to Amherst College. So we're just very, very proud of them, and we want to, you know, track them and to know what they're doing, and we also want to invite them back in the future to be counselors to work with the program.
Wow, that's incredible. And as a young lady being a part of the program, what do you see are some of the most beneficial things that the students will get from the program?
Well, I think it definitely raises their level of self-esteem. I think that's a core benefit. It raises their level of who they are in this world, and it gives them a snippet of how they can make a difference. We really try to build them up and let them know how important that they are. One of the things that we want to do a much better job on is we are bringing in skilled tutors for math. We did find last year that math was sort of a shortcoming of some of the girls, a large majority of the girls last year. And we want to let them know that they can do it. We want to give them a lot of the fundamentals to do it. And, you know, we want to provide sort of ongoing training for that. We saw math was a struggle for a lot of the girls because the SATs, the standardized tests, a lot of times the girls were not exposed to the math that's on the standardized tests. So we had one student that went back to her school and she said, listen, I need to have a higher grade of math. I want to be ready for these standardized exams. So she advocated on her own behalf to get into an honors math program. And she did just finish an honors math program and did very well, very well.
Wow. And let's say a mother or even a young lady listening to the program today, they say, wow, this is really something that I want to get involved with. Do you have any specific admission criteria to get into the program?
We do. The students have to have a B average. We like to see at least a B average. They have to have a letter of recommendation from a teacher, a guidance counselor, or it could be even a family friend. And they have to write a two-page essay on who inspires them. Or the other topic that they can choose is name something that you can do in your community that would make a positive difference. And the latter question is one I really like, because most girls, it's very easy to write about someone who inspires them. But to think about ways to change your community for the better, I think, is a more challenging essay question.
Yeah, I like that question a lot, too. What is the cost? What is the tuition and fees for this program?
The tuition is $2,495 for the two-week program, but we have been really blessed to receive funding from the Fish Foundation. They've given us some funding. Of course, there's not a lot of funding, but we try to solicit private donors that will sponsor girls or sponsor their tuition at least 50%. 90% of the students that come in, they come in on financial aid. So they usually get up to 100% really of financial aid.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But it's on a first come first serve basis. So.
Well, and how many students do you take?
We just accepted 52 students this year.
Wow, wow, that's incredible. I love to hear stuff like that. We're almost at the end of this segment, but let the audience know exactly all of the information that they need to know, your website, your phone number, your email address, so they can reach out to you.
Sure, sure. Our website is www.atthewellconferences.org. And our office is at 394 Broadway in New York City. The phone number is 646-592-1488. And we are a small, budding nonprofit, but I believe that we are just growing and we are making the difference in the lives of young women of color, one by one, one at a time. And our conferences are particularly impactful. We've had for the last 2 years film star Brian White from the movie Good Deeds. He's okay. Just come and just been such a blessing and an inspiration. A lot of people don't know this, but he is a Dartmouth grad, highly educated young man, and just loves to empower young people. So he's come to join us 2 years in a row, and we expect him back in 2013.
Wow, wow, that's incredible. You're doing a great job over there, Jackie.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Anything else you want to say before I let you go?
When people see an organization, and it may have a small beginning, but if you see that the organizers have their heart in this thing, I've just implore your audience to volunteer, to try to make a difference when they see someone doing something, because it really takes a village to do the type of work that we are doing. And
absolutely.
If it wasn't for those parents and volunteers, I'm not sure if we'd be very successful. So, I just implore people to volunteer and to reach out and make a difference in organizations, not just mine, but those that are like mine that are trying to make a difference.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Jacqueline Glass, she is the founder and CEO of AtTheWellConferences.org. Visit her website, check her out, and in any way that you can, help support what she's doing. Jacqueline, it was great having you on today.
Thank you so much, Neil. You have a great evening.
Okay, you too. Folks, we're going to come back. Hopefully, Congressman Yvette Clark will join us. She's had a long, long day today. And she's going to be checking in just a few minutes. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? I'm Brian McKnight for RAD, recording artist, actor, and athlete against drunk driving. Give your keys to a friend, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
You're like a dream come true. Just want to be with you. It's plain to see.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
My name is Susan L. Taylor, Editor-in-Chief Emeritus of Essence Magazine. My sadness and depression grew out of giving myself to my career before I would give myself to myself. And then I am out there speaking in front of thousands of people with a smile pasted on my face but dying on the inside. Hiding sadness makes you more and more sad because it closes you off. Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing. We're dying, and the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
This is Terry Williams, co-founder of the Stay Strong Foundation. Mental illness is devastating our community, and it's up to us to stop it. It's time for us to wake up, stand up, and speak up. And what I know is, together, we can do this. Search online for stories that heal. We must share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
And we're back. You're listening to Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow Soul. And joining me now is Blake Radio Rainbow Soul contributor, Mr. Ted Terry. Are you in the house with me?
I'm in the house with you, Neil.
Yeah, he is. Ted Terry is the founder, CEO of AfrocentricNews.com and DickGregory.com as well. So what's going on? What's in the news that our audience needs to hear about today, Ted?
Oh, gosh, there's so much in the news, Neil. It's the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court.
There you go.
This has been the Supreme Court's week. This is the Supreme Court's week, with the decision today on the Arizona law, which, of course, you heard they struck down. I think all but one provision of the law, meaning that officers can ask you if you're from Negro Town.
Right.
So, and we know that you are from Negro Town.
That's right.
So they can deport you back.
Yep.
But it's a lot of things going on in the news. The Supreme Court is going to have a field day this week with the health issue that's on the table that the Obama administration put forth, and I kind of think that. It's going to be Obama's week, regardless of what the Supreme Court does.
Yeah.
Because if they strike it down, then the president can say, well, listen, they've struck it down. Well, we can go back to the table and give you a better one.
Yeah.
Since they feel that.
How do you feel about President Obama just bypassing the Congress and setting, the mandate that he wanted as far as immigration goes?
Well, he had to put immigration on the table because Romney does not want to talk about immigration. It's when you look at the campaigns, I believe that it's all about the political strategy of each campaign, each person who's running for the presidency. It's how good they are. And Obama is a masterful politician. You have not seen do you remember back when he was running against Hillary?
Yep.
And Hillary was supposed to win. Do you remember that? I mean, I know it's kind of hard.
He wasn't even on the radar of anybody, basically.
Well, that's true. But he pulled out, and you have to go back and search your memory banks and figure out why he did it and how he did it. So when Romney runs, I'd say 3 months before the election, maybe a couple of months, he's going to pull a rabbit out of his hat.
Oh, I agree. I agree very much.
It's inevitable. All the things that we're seeing today are just window dressings and semantics, because we're really talking about some serious posturing and positioning here. It took Bush so many years, which we're not supposed to talk about George Bush. About the 8 years that he was in office. But Obama's been in how many years? A year and some change. 3 years and some change. And we're not supposed to even say, well, anything about those other 8 years, previous 8 years. But I think America's going to give this young president a chance, another 4 more years. That's what I feel.
I agree with you, yep.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I think all of it's a smokescreen. I don't think Romney has a chance, to be honest with you. I think it's just what's being put out there. But I don't see the masses voting for Romney.
Yeah, and you have the young congresswoman coming on, right? Congresswoman Clark?
Yes, she's supposed to be checking.
Yeah,
she probably had a long day today.
I think that with the congressional leaders like Congresswoman Clark, they have their hands full. You look at her, she's in the 11th Congressional District in New York. Who are her constituents? Are they a potpourri or melting pot of people? And she's an African American or Negro?
Yep. No.
Okay. Huh?
Yep. Yeah,
I mean, is it difficult for those in the Congressional Black Caucus who are representing a melting pot of people to be a representative of black folks?
Yeah, it's difficult, you know, and also to maintain your integrity. I mean, that's the key thing. I mean, she is a congressperson who, I believe, because I do know her, she has maintained her integrity, you know, mm-hmm. and that's very difficult to do in Washington, D.C.
With me, you know, I'm totally Afrocentric, Afrocentered. I'm about issues that are favorable to black folks. I am, because we don't talk about things that affect us as much as we should. There should be a committee of, in the Congressional Black Caucus, a committee to study racism. We don't hear the word redlining anymore in our communities or in the general market, where redlining always happens too. I mean, if you look at business when it affects the African American community, that's news to me.
Yes,
you talk
yes.
about news, that is news to me. Where we need to continue to talk about why we as a you know, a race of people have problems with economics and properly positioning ourselves as other races do. And those are some of the things I would like to ask you know, the congressional people in the Black Caucus. And I know she's you know, one person. She was on the last time we were on. And
with the Trayvon murders, yeah.
Yes, the Trayvon Martin. And we mentioned this organization called ALEC. Remember that?
Yes, I do, yeah.
And then you know the rest of the story. The American Legislative Exchange Council, which, of course, subsequent to our discussion about ALEC on your program, I think about 54 the legislators have dumped ALEC, and major corporations like Walmart, Johnson & Johnson, Amazon, Coke, Pepsi, Kraft, McDonald's, Wendy's, Intuit, and so forth, and the list goes on, who have, you know, stepped away. Now, you know how powerful that American Legislative Exchange Council, well, they still are powerful, because they have their corporate ink pen in the legislative well and to write laws. That's how powerful that organization is still today.
Yeah.
Because conservatives have not abandoned ALEC.
Explain to the audience a little bit about the organization so they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, it's an organization comprised of a number of members from the corporate arena. And it was formed. I don't have the exact, you know, statistics in front of me, but they were created so that members could be a part of it to implement policy or create legislation like the Stand Your Ground Law. That was implemented through ALEC, A-L-E-C for short, and their membership. I mean, if you have corporate beast in an organization with unlimited revenue or funds to do whatever manner of pestilence they're able to do and to write laws, and those laws are going to be funneled through by guess who? Those legislatures that they are a part of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's scary. Totally scary. But, you know, as I said, a number of people have backed away. So, Neil, how have you been?
I've been pretty good, man. I'm you know, just trying to keep Blake Radio moving and disseminating the information, as you say. You know, we can be pro-Afrocentric, and that's what we are. You know, you can be pro something without being anti something else, you know, and that's what Blake Radio is about. That's what Rainbow Soul is about. And that's the kind of programming that we, you know, we've been trying to put out to the public since 2001 with Rainbow Soul. And I think that's around the time that we met, right?
Yeah, through Kanye.
Brother Kanye, yeah, that's
brother
right.
Brother Kanye, and I take my hat off to the brother. Think he's going to outlive Father Time.
Yeah, yep, he's still kicking, you know, he's
yeah,
80 plus.
Yeah, and what you're doing with it, I wish, well, I'm on my wish list, which has now turned into a bucket list.
Yeah.
is that I would hope that parents would embrace the internet seriously, because this is in the form of communication, information, communication. It is so important that certain communities understand how powerful the internet is. Because if it's controlled, then it will be unuseful for you, because now you can go to the internet and type in certain information at Google, or and it gives you information immediately. Immediately.
That's right.
It's just so much. It's so vast. And it's worldwide, internationally. International. So, and then, but me, as you know, I'm one to always tell parents to teach their children the language of the computer. And that's always some news coming out of my mouth. It's about Unix or some boring technical stuff. But it's important. A child 5 years of age can learn that stuff. And a child who's five or six are weird. They're weird anyway. And they can pick up information. Five languages they can speak. Huh?
I'm telling you, the kids are incredible at this point.
I know, incredible. And they can learn that stuff. And I guess for some people, Windows is a chore. But if you get into the Unix community and the Linux community, it's something. But to see what I've seen about computers, and being a former missile technician in the military, and back then I must have been crazy too. But for the transitioning into, you know, the communications industry, it's an interesting thing. But you know, I think that as we grow in this thing we call life, we must embrace those things that are put before us, and the internet's one of them. So trust me, embrace it. And Blake yeah. Radio has been I want to see you grow. I want to see you do wonderful things. And I know you will, because I'm a part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tell the audience a little bit about AfrocentricNews.com.
AfrocentricNews.com was created, I guess, it's back in 1997. When a HTML site. Now, I must tell you that I do Afrocentric News as I choose to do it. It's not a corporate animal. It's not a serious to hope to die, you know, take me to the bank and say, yay, help, thank you. No, it's information that is posted on the website, like with DickGregory.com or with Urban News Daily or other web portals that are under the umbrella, over 100 of them. But those things are designed. I've always had this vision in my head to provide a conduit for young people to be content input providers, or, you know, scenario where they can, future journalists, okay, future radio, television people can be a part of this Afrocentric infrastructure, you know, internet or intranet. Well, that's inter, but information superhighway. There's so many things that we're going to be offering down the road. Video, because you know the YouTube, and so we've tried to partner with individuals who have large pipe, as they say. To deal with video, you have to have large video pipe. So, but the Afrocentric news is, like I said, it's been around for quite some time, and it's pretty much up 98% of the time, you know, and hopefully it'll be here after I'm gone and you're gone, and I'm sure Blake Radio. But a website is a website, but you have to understand what makes it work, where it sits, and it sits on name servers. And those are the things that I was saying earlier about the technical aspect of it. If you look at the Internet like a highway, an interstate, and I'm sure, Neil, you know this, when you place an interstate over the United States, you see arteries and ways to get certain places around this country via 35, 44 different highways. Well, the Internet's the same way. When you have a website and it sits on a server, well, that server is like a filling station or a service station on the interstate. But then we'll call that the information superhighway. And let's say if you're looking for Neil Blake or Blake Radio or RainbowSoul.com, and then your computer immediately, in a nanosecond, you notice how fast this stuff comes back.
It's crazy.
It goes out and it calls out Rainbow Soul. It goes out in a nanosecond, and that service station or that name server that houses that domain calls back and says, "Here I am," in a nanosecond, and brings that information back. So if you look at it from all around the world, you've got all these name servers. But then you've got these big behemoth name servers, the granddaddies of them all, that talks to little small name servers. So if you really can see the Internet and how it works, then you'll get the larger vision of what I'm talking about. I have no idea, Neil. You know better to get me talking about the Internet.
No, but it's great.
But it's a passion for me.
Yes.
It is a passion. And when you get my age, my goodness, if you still have a passion in life, then you go for it. And hanging around Dick Gregory, you know that's got to be. No, I love Dick Gregory. I really do. He's one of a kind.
Yep.
Beg pardon?
Yep. Positive influence. How old is Dick these days?
How old is he?
Yeah.
Dick Gregory is going to be 80 years young in October.
Wow.
We were just in San Francisco recently. He and I, Paul Mooney, and others, we were there in concert at the Black Repertory Theater in Oakland. And so we went up there for four nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Two shows a night. And I think this is the first time Paul and Dick Gregory had been on stage like this before. First night, Danny Glover came in, and it was packed, and the second shows were packed, and packed every night. And it was one of the most entertaining, at least from the people saying, this is one of a kind. So we're going to take this thing on the road, take Dick Gregory.
That's an incredible lineup, man. I love Paul Mooney, love Dick Gregory. Wow, that's an incredible lineup.
Yeah, together.
Lineup.
Together,
wow.
Yeah, together. That's them. They just come off of an event in Baltimore just recently. And we're going to be sending them to England in September.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To kick off the international on-the-road type of tour scenario. So, but it's a pleasure working with Dick Gregory, just being around him. I met him years ago as my stint in radio and communications. I never get out of it, see? It's kind of a vicious circle.
Yeah, yeah.
Never get out of that.
It's
but,
tough.
You know, and then... Don't let me get to talking.
Well, you need to talk. Tell the audience about what you want to say, because you got some good things to say, man. They need to know. I mean, here in New York, they shut down 98.7 KISS. Yeah, they shut down 98.7 KISS. They're trying to shut down WBLS now.
Well, I used to work at BLS.
Yes.
To work at WBLS back in 1970. Oh, I'm dating myself. 1976. I think it was 76. Frankie Crocker, I mean, I guess this is a story. Frankie Crocker was being indicted by a federal grand jury for something he was doing. I don't know what it was. So I was working here in Los Angeles, and he said, "Listen, Ted, would you come to New York and take my place? I'm Frankie Crocker." And I said, "Okay, I'll do you that one." So I went to New York. That's where I met Hal Jackson, who recently passed away, I think.
Yeah, we just lost Hal not too
long. Right. Met Hal Jackson, Pepe, Percy Sutton, and all the, you know, the people in New York back in the 70s. Totally interesting experience working at BLS back in those days. It was short, but still I had that opportunity to do that. And I remember when I was on the radio, I did a little joke. I said, "There are only three words that ends with G-R-Y. Unbeknownst to me, the reach of BLS. And I said, first word is hungry, and the second word was angry. But I didn't tell him the last word.
Right.
I left it that way. And what happened was the switchboards were, like, lit up. I mean, absolutely lit up. I never told them. And I'm not telling you either.
I'm curious. I want to know what you said.
Yeah, right. Well, then your audience would go like, "Oh, hungry, angry? What's the other word?" But anyway, New York was interesting, WBLS. I think there was one called WRVR back in the day or something.
WWRL, yeah.
Yeah, WWRL. Yeah. And then there was a sister station, the AM station. Is that the one?
Yeah, WWR was 1600 AM, yeah.
Yeah, I was there doing the centennial.
Wow.
I was living at 42nd and Madison Avenue. It was, so can you imagine, I'd never been to New York. That was my first time in New York back then.
Wow. Now, how long did you stay here? Not very long,
maybe almost a year.
Okay, well, that's a good run, though.
Yeah, it was all right, but... I had some good times in New York now. Don't get me wrong. Now, you learn a lot quickly in New York.
Oh, yeah, you have to. Yeah.
You learn how to catch cab. And a black man in New York, you have to learn how to catch cab.
Yeah.
You have to look like you want one. From there, radio has taken me all around the world, and I've, worked in television. But how did this become the Ted Terry Show?
Because that's why I brought you on, because you're a wealth of information, your history. Deirdre Shula had on Bob Law a couple weeks ago.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, because they're filing the petition against the company that's trying to, take over BLS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a whole history with that going on, because the whole threat is that what they did with 98.7 KISS here, once they bought it, they took the folks from 98.7 KISS and put some of them on WBLS.
Mm.
And they've made KISS now as a sports channel. It's an ESPN affiliate now.
Oh, and they're taking the BLS and making it a little stepchild.
Right. Oh. So they're going to try to get rid of BLS, and maybe they might make that sports or make it a different genre of music. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, we won't have any R&B music in the New York area. There'll be nothing on the airwaves. So there's a petition being filed now, to keep that going. But that's on the music side. But one of the major issues is that there's no more black talk radio.
Yeah, and it has to be talk. That has to be talk radio. Now, Stevie Wonder's going to get very mad at me, but I don't really care. I had said to him, "Listen, let me just preface it by saying, years ago, back in before Stevelyn Morris, aka Stevie Wonder, bought KJLH, Kindness, Joy, Love, and Happiness here in Los Angeles, California. I was sitting there. It was previous owner was John Lamar Hill, who owned the Angelus Funeral Home, an institution as distinctive as its name." I had to say that because I used to say it on the radio all the time. He previously owned KJLH. And one night, Stevie Wonder came in the studio with John Lamar Hill, and John walked in and says, "Ted, here's your new owner, Stevie Wonder." I just had dinner with the guy the night before. He never said anything to me about it. I'm talking about Mr. Wonder. But he came in, bought the station. And I told him once before, I said, listen, you know, eventually you're going to have to go talk. Eventually. I mean, maybe 20 years from now. Because this is the way it's going. And now he's still playing music. And he is probably the only black to own a station west of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Black-owned radio station. Would you
Does
believe
Stevie
that?
Still own that station?
He still owns the station.
Oh, he still owns it. Okay.
Yes, he still owns the station. It's in Inglewood, California. It wasn't Compton. It's Compton frequency. But it's in Los Angeles. And he still plays music. Steve Harvey's on it there in the morning.
Yeah.
But I would love to see KJLH go talk. I really would. I know the young people would probably go like, no. But we have to have black talk radio. We do. It's a must. Internet, what you're doing, and we must have black press conferencing over the internet. There's no place that Yvette Clark or any person who wants to do a press conference today, immediately, can go and do it.
Right.
Can't do it. You can't get the word out when you want to get it out. You have to beg someone to do it. And you have to have that. Beg your pardon?
That's a great point, you know.
Yeah, it has to happen. And I probably have the ability to do it, but, you know, it's just you have to have willing partners to do anything in life.
Yeah.
In these times, you have to have like minds. Ignorance is not, an excuse because you mess up the water. You have to be very knowledgeable of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You really do.
And no one station can be everything to an entire community. So that's
right,
why I
absolutely.
Like your idea of having a network of stations.
Yes.
Yeah, like I said, when people want to get the word out, then, let's say all 100 stations are taking the press conference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then you have some collective weism involved. And they can be their own entity to themselves. But it's similar to what's going on. I mean, you have network television, network radio. And you hear CBS on substations. It's nationwide. So getting the word out is very important. With Trayvon Martin, I mean, it would have been nice if there could have been the Black Caucus or someone who represents the African-American community. And I was going to ask you that. Who today is the representative of the African-American community?
That's a great question.
Al Sharpton's on TV.
Yeah, Al Sharpton's on TV. Jesse's no longer doing much. It's a tough call. It really is. I mean,
everybody's
I think now
for position of what?
Right. There's no big, as I would say, national leader per se. I mean, the biggest national leader would be President Obama, but he's not functioning strictly on for the African American community because he's got to represent everybody.
He doesn't live in Negro Town.
Right.
I'm looking for someone who lives in Negro Town.
Who do you think that is?
I'm asking. I withhold my views until I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you open your mouth and say yes, I really think he's the one. Just like Oprah says, he's the one.
Right. Well, who do you think is the one?
You ask.
Or has the potential to be the one?
I told you I refuse to answer.
Well, you have to answer that. This is the time.
No, I don't. No. No, Neil Blake. Okay, Neil, you be it. You're it today.
Right.
I mean,
so you basically
up.
Have nobody. That's the bottom line.
Well, I mean, but see, Congresswoman Clark and the other congresspeople in the Black Caucus, I notice she's on quite a few committees, the Homeland Security Committee, the Small Business Committee, the Education and Labor, and just different committees. And she knows things before we do.
That's right, yeah.
From that level. But on the other side of the coin, we know things before she does. I mean, in the trenches, out here in the communities. around the country. Now, she may know things in New York, and because I always say, if you limit yourself to your own corner of the block, you'll be there the rest of your life.
That's right.
And there's some people that do that. And they don't know, they've never been away from their corner of the block, don't know what's happening around the street, and most likely really don't care. But we have to change that mindset. You have to care. Because when it's all said and done, and wait till next year when it really gets rough. I'm talking about this last part of this recession. Oh, yeah. I think the international community likes Obama. You know why?
Why is that?
Gas prices are coming down.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought about that. I said, you know, that may be a reason. Because if OPEC didn't like Obama, would you think gas prices would be down?
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point.
I mean, you have to know. It could be true. Okay, Neil.
Before we check out, I want to know one of the number one. What's one of your number one concerns as it pertains to the black community right now? Because we only have a few minutes. I know you could talk for 2 or 3 hours. But give me one of your number one concerns right now that needs to be addressed, in your opinion.
Economics. Economics. Well, the concern is economic racism. Okay? How can we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps when we don't have access to the strings or the boots? There's no grease to grease the wheel. We spend so much money. We're past $1 billion in spending. We used to be $750 billion. To brag about it, you know, the African American community spends $750 billion annually. To whom? We don't give it to ourselves. We don't reach down and make young black men millionaires. I mean, the entire community could do that if they wanted to, if they were collective weism, but they're not. It's just an ongoing vicious cycle. Dick Gregory always said, if we were to withhold Thanksgiving and Christmas, just not spend one dime, then those people in those ivory towers would have to come down and ask us, what do you people want? Because it would affect the whole economy.
Yeah, yeah.
It would. So, I mean, economics. That is the number one. People always talk about education. They talk about everything else but economics. And the words of Jim Clingman, hey, it's about economics.
That's right.
So
without that, you have nothing, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you have nothing. And you can't. And I hate the word can't, but it's just utterly impossible to do something.
Yeah.
Without,
it's hard to leverage power. Without
revenue,
the money.
Revenue. One of my wish lists, not bucket list now, is I wish the president would hit the reset button when it comes to credit. Just reset every black person's credit to 756. Wouldn't that be a great day?
Yep, yep.
It would. You have good credit. Go forth, my child.
Right.
And do great things. That's a form of economic, isn't it? What do you call it? Taking the shackles off my back? Anyway, Neil, I enjoyed
my pleasure,
time
man.
With you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry to the audience that, you know, Yvette, Congressman Clark couldn't show up. She's probably got tied up. A lot happened today, but we will definitely have her back on again. She was great when we had her on the Trayvon Martin case.
I had to promote my stuff here. Now, for those of you, we talked about Afrocentric News. You can go there, AfrocentricNews.com, or you can go to DickGregory.com, and you can send an email to whichever email you find there, and your subject probably will get me. And I will be glad to email you back, and hopefully someone might want to be participatorial. That's a good word, isn't it, Neil?
Yeah, I love that word. That you just made up, right?
Yeah, I just made it participatorial. You know, and the involvement one would love to see. If you're a writer, hey, love to hear what you have to say. If you're a technical person, love to hear what you have to say. And on that note, I'll be quiet.
Ted, it's a pleasure as always. Got to get you on the air a little bit more often. You know, we were featuring your show that you did with Frances Cress Welsing.
Yeah,
incredible
show. That Frances Cress Welsing, I mean, she's like, I'm going to have to start paying her royalties.
Yeah, yeah.
And Neely Fuller, I love the Neely Fuller
show. Oh, that was a great show as well.
Great show as well. I think I learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
You do the Gloria Lynn thing?
Yeah, Gloria, we haven't played in a while, but yeah, that's another classic show. I mean, you guys have done some classic shows. A lot of folks have come and gone. Oscar Brown Jr., a lot of different people, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to do some more shows,
We just got to – we have to document it because these things, they live on into perpetuity, and it's not only for our children – but for our children's children. Ted, I want to thank you for stopping by and helping out today. We really do appreciate that. I want to thank my guest, my first guest, Jacqueline Glass. You want to go check out her stuff. It's an incredible program empowering the young sisters around the world through starting locally. And that's what grabbed my attention in her press release. You start local and create some global kings and Queens. I'm Neil Blake. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. Until next time, take it easy.